Today's show, we go through all 8 playoff contenders and try to figure it out like we're a Washtenaw County judge. Plus, we make some picks.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Finally, she posted about the race on social media and did not disclose that she had competed in the race on a non-competitive basis. I like how this non-competitive basis. She caught a ride.
Russ Dellinger.
Because of their strength of schedule, I can't imagine a one-loss Michigan getting in over any other one-loss team.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I'll show up and play in a sandlot. I just want to go play there. Nothing against the fine city of Charlotte or the famous toastery where I did have a good brunch one time.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and it is Flotsam and Jetsam week in terms of our... Actually, there's a few games. We're going to pick them. But most of them, actually probably better than most years, isn't it?
Yeah,
there's
it
some
is.
Dogs out there.
Right. We've had some really bad penultimate weeks in years past. This is only slightly bad.
Don't look in the SEC.
Yeah, that's
just don't. Just don't even look. Don't even look. SEC, Dan, SEC opponents this week. Mm. Chattanooga, Louisiana Monroe, Southern Miss, Abilene Christian, New Mexico State, Florida International, Georgia State.
Yeah.
How about that?
Woo-hoo. Thank God for Georgia, Tennessee, which I
love Georgia, Tennessee. And that was expected to be a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
It probably will not. But that's where I want to start. So I want to look at our 8 contenders for the playoff. There are 8 reasonable contenders for the playoff, I think. I don't really see how there is a 9th. Looking at the rankings, I do love how the rankings are essentially, if you have 0 losses, you go 1-5. If you have 1 loss, you're basically 6-10. They let Missouri slip ahead of Louisville. That was the drama.
Yes, they upset that ironclad agreement there by putting 2-loss Missouri ahead there.
You think they just did that because they didn't want to look like...
Yes. Yes, I do. We're not just slot voting by losses, I promise. See?
I don't know what to say. I don't like these guys. These men and women go there every week to do that. What, I just can't even imagine. Just not my personality.
No, it definitely... You're not a meeting guy, so
not a meeting guy. I was invited to that mock thing a few times. I'm like, why would I do that? Sounds horrible.
Here's what would happen. Dan would be down there like playing word games on his phone the whole
Sudoku
time instead of paying
day.
Attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Absolutely.
I enjoyed the mock. I walked out of there thinking, what the hell are we doing? That's what I walked out of there thinking, because the whole time was spent on, like, you know, these silly analytical statistics, like these, you know, game control and average margin of victory. And I'm just like, oh, my God, like, why can't we just go to some kind of NFL model where it takes the committee out of it, takes subjectivity out of it? Give me all or most automatic qualifiers and take this stupid stuff out.
College football loves its ambiguity.
Loves meetings and rules.
Yeah.
They love meetings and rules about meetings and meetings about rules. Like, why would I need to go to that to know that this is a pointless exercise? Like, would I just go to a tax seminar? About, like, you know, how to, like, write off, if you had a trucking company, how to write off your trucks. Like, I don't have a trucking company. Why would I? I'm sure that is an applicable skill set or knowledge to have for someone who does that work. I don't.
That's why they had the mock thing. Unless they started it in
basketball.
So
that we won't make fun of it, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Basketball is 10 times worse because there's more teams, but. But it's so that you get in there and you sit down and say, oh, wow, this is really complicated. I'm going to stop complaining or ripping the people that do it, except it doesn't really work. We still.
At the end of the day, it's like basketball. It's like there's some 17 and 12 team didn't make it.
Right. Yeah.
Or some 25 and 4 mid-major didn't make it. You know,
that's more likely.
That's more likely. But this, I don't get why you would rank to 25. I don't get why. I guess I do. You got to have whatever is a quality win. I don't get why you do this for 6 straight weeks, except for TV. I just can't. No way. Absolutely not. Like, there's golf courses. There's a golf course. If I'm going to fly to Texas to have a meeting, I'm going to go to, like, no. There are other things. Like, other things I could be doing other than this. Anything.
The jalapeno cream corn is good, but it's not that good. Not
I don't know how they get these. I do not get how they get these people to do this. My hero was Archie Manning. Was there for 2 weeks and then claimed he had, I don't know, what, some
family injury.
Knee injury. Yeah.
Screw you guys. Yeah. What's this crap we're doing over here?
This sounded like kind of cool. It's not. I'm Archie Manning. Everything I do is cool. I am America's guest. I've now got grandkids who are stars. Come on, man. All right. Anyway, they did come up with a meeting, though. So let's go through them.
All right.
I mean, it doesn't mean it's not relevant. I mean, we could have figured out. Here's the thing. We could figure out the 8 contenders without the ranking. But let's do it. Number one, Georgia. It was so exciting this week. They jumped past Ohio State. Thrilling moment. They're at Tennessee. They're at Georgia Tech. They play Alabama in Atlanta for the SEC title game. They look deep. They look improved. Carson Beck is playing well. Big numbers against Ole Miss in Florida, for what that's worth. Big news, Brock Bowers is back this weekend. The surgery worked. He still leads Georgia in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdown catches. Oh, and they've won 28 straight. What are we feeling about Georgia here? Pat?
I'm feeling really good about Georgia. Yeah. They keep showing more and more, especially offensively. You know, at the beginning, I thought Mike Bobo was so cautious with Carson Beck, and maybe rightfully so, but I mean, they never threw the ball downfield. Everything was underneath. Everything was a check down. Everything was a swing pass. Everything was short and easy and safe, and that has changed. They are now getting vertical. It certainly helps that Ladd McConkey is fully healthy. He's been a good deep threat for them in recent games here, and Bowers is back. They've got other receivers stepping up, and then their running game, as usual, is consistently good. You know, I mean, they just punished Mississippi. They've got a great offensive line. They've got good backs, and it's just all come together for them offensively. This is not as good a defensive team as the last 2 years. That's understandable. Look at the NFL. But this is a really good, complete Georgia team once again, and right now they are number one, and they should be number one.
Yeah, you know, early in the year, maybe even midway through the year, I certainly had concerns. Georgia looked vulnerable. I mean, teams were even at least moving the ball, kind of. UAB, Auburn, even Vanderbilt at some point moved the ball a little bit. And they just, you know, they weren't slamming the door. Georgia, South Carolina, you know, remember the South Carolina game, how much of a struggle offensively it was for them. In the first half, I think they scored one touchdown. So they look vulnerable. And then the bye week arrived after the Vanderbilt game. And really before that, you know, after the Auburn game, they really got rolling. When October hit, you know, they had Kentucky. They blew out Kentucky. And then they had Vandy. And they had the bye week. And then they've rolled. And while the Missouri game was close for a while, actually, I mean, Missouri's a good team. We've obviously seen Missouri's a really good team. So I feel much different now than I did just like 4 or 5 weeks ago about the Bulldogs. This is a fairly dominant team on both sides of the ball. And at this rate, I think, you know, there's only one or two teams right now that could beat them.
I'm in agreement. I think Georgia Bulldogs 3 in a row is very, very doable. Let's get to the juiciest possible thing this committee could have happen to them. And I'm now jumping. I had a plan to go 1, 2, 3, but that's boring. We'll jump to 7. Alabama. They play Chattanooga. They're at Auburn. They play Georgia and Atlanta. They are probably on your short list of teams that are capable of beating Georgia, Ross. I'm going to presume they're looking better. 48 points against LSU, 42 against Kentucky. Jalen Milroe is playing really well. Big question is, are these defenses any good? Is the SEC any good besides Alabama, Georgia, and maybe Missouri? So here's the situation. Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, knocking Georgia to one loss. You could have an undefeated Big Ten champ, an undefeated Florida State, an undefeated Washington, all moving up, or maybe Oregon. I don't know how that would work, but certainly let's say Washington wins out. And then your fourth spot would come down to potentially Alabama or Texas. Texas has at Iowa State. They play Texas Tech. They get a Big 12 title game. They have not looked great lately. Close victories over Houston, Kansas State, and TCU. Quinn Ewers is back, though. Running back Jonathan Brooks is out for the year. Right now, Texas is ranked ahead of Alabama. Reason? They went to Tuscaloosa and won by 10 points. Head-to-head, Texas beat Alabama. So, if it comes down to this is pretty juicy. If it comes down to Texas and Alabama fighting for that fourth spot, each having a loss, Texas is to Oklahoma, Alabama's to Texas, could we have a playoff without the SEC? Namely, Alabama sitting at 5 and Georgia sitting at 6, both with one loss. Pat, Armageddon?
Oh, yeah. Now, that like, the entire South would lose its mind, Greg Sankey leading them. That would be wild. Could it happen? It could. I mean, the way you laid it out, yes, it's possible. I don't think the committee could bring itself to do that. I don't. I think whoever wins between Georgia and Alabama is in. And if Georgia loses, Georgia might be in too. We'll see. Depends what happens. There are still so many permutations that could still happen. Like the committee, you know, we just spent a little while making fun of their work, but they're going to have a very hard job in the last couple of weeks of this, I think, because there's a lot of teams still in contention, and you're going to be in some hair-splitting situations most likely. We'll see if they get bailed out. We'll see if Florida State loses and drops out, or Washington loses, or Oregon, you know, somebody in there, you know, makes it a little bit easier for them to sort this thing out. But I have a hard time seeing them taking a league that has won 4 straight championships, right? Is that right? 19 LSU, 20 Alabama, 21-22 Georgia, and saying, nope, your champion isn't going. Now, you're not supposed to look at the past. This is each season is a contained thing. I'm sorry, but I don't see it. I think the SEC champion is getting in.
There might literally be another rebellion. Another Southern rebellion. I mean, literally, I do think there could be marches on, you know, Dallas at the CFP hotel, you know, like instead of the South attacking the North, it would be attack Texas. It would be bad. But if you look at the numbers and the, and all that stuff, I mean, you could certainly see it happen. You could come to the conclusion that an undefeated Washington and an undefeated Big Ten champion and an undefeated Florida State and a one-loss Texas, if Alabama beats Georgia, should all get in. There's certainly that argument to be made. I would imagine that none of that will happen. Like as far as what I just reeled off, obviously it's pretty clear you're going to have I think the highest likelihood, right, is you're going to have a one-loss Big Ten champion. You're going to have an undefeated Florida State. You're going to have a one-loss Pac-12 champion. I think that's the odds. And, you know, that gives a doorway into potentially 2 SEC teams getting in, or certainly at least Georgia if they win, or Alabama if they win the SEC championship game. I think that's the highest likelihood, is that you'll have that. But then we're going to be comparing the loser of the game, you know, the one-loss Big Ten champion, to a potentially like one loss Alabama, one loss Texas. And given Michigan's schedule, they really need to win that game, right? They need to win the game because a one loss Michigan, especially with everything going on, right? It would be fascinating, but because of their strength of schedule, I can't imagine a one loss Michigan getting in over any other one loss team, one loss conference champion.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, Michigan. They didn't play anybody.
Yeah. No, yeah. They bring some schedule issues to the table, and they chose that schedule. You know, they were terminating contracts to play UCLA and Virginia Tech in recent years so that they could have an easier non-conference schedule.
Yeah, and you know, there's things around all that, but you go find a game. You just got to pay, and they got money. But that's and we don't know you'd win the game. That's the thing. Like, you can say, well, we would have just scheduled whatever. We could have scheduled some. Well, would you win it? I don't know. Let's say you play Oklahoma. Okay, would you win? You can't project what you could schedule and then project a victory. This is all heading to Washington County Court, isn't it? Is that it? Washington Trial Court is going to settle this whole dispute. Some U of M law professor will determine what. Look at I get it. I get it. It's the SEC. The idea of a playoff without Alabama or Georgia in it would disappoint me. It would not feel right. It would not feel competitive. It would not be good. That said, how the heck do you ignore? Would you ignore? And I agree with Ross. It's probably this thing is usually really easy, which is part of the funny part of the 6 week meetings. Like, it's really some years it comes down to like, well, these are the four. There's really no decision. And then we have to sort out all the other bowl games. No, you don't. Like, that could be done on a Zoom. You don't have to spend 6 weeks in this. Like, does anyone really cares in the Capital One Bowl or not? Or, you know, there's all, you could come up with other parts. You could have someone else could do that. But it's likely to come down to be very, very clear. That's how it generally works. But if you have a decision between Alabama and Texas, and the answer is, we have to take the SEC champ, when the SEC did not do well in non-conference play. Their best win right now,
7 years. Yeah.
You know what the best win is they have, the league, as best I can tell? Mississippi State over Arizona in double OT. They beat the 17th team. LSU lost. How good is LSU? Tennessee doesn't look good. Like, none of these teams look good. Missouri beat Kansas State. That was a good win.
Yeah.
But Kansas State's in the 20s. Alabama didn't play Missouri, did they? They don't play Missouri.
No.
They don't have that win. No. Alabama, like, okay, they look terrific against Kentucky now. Maybe Kentucky beats Louisville. I don't know. There's still stuff to happen, right? You still got the you know, South Carolina beat Clemson, and Florida could beat Florida State. Those would be good. That could be
Dan, I will not let you disparage Auburn's win at Cal.
Okay. I did forget that one. I have to admit. Alabama will get a
kickoff is at 11 p.m. Eastern.
It'll get a boost after it beats Auburn. If Texas won the game at Alabama,
that's the thing. 10, the games have to count. And sometimes to the committee, it feels like the only thing that counts is analytics.
You go back to the year that Michigan State beat that loaded Ohio State team. Mm-hmm. Where famously, like, for whatever reason, Ohio State forgot they had Ezekiel Elliott on the team.
Yes.
And if you polled anyone other than green and white, you said 100 people say, who's the better team, Ohio State or Michigan State? You'd say Ohio State. And Michigan State went to the playoff and got destroyed. But they still won the game.
They did. So, and like, they also won the Big Ten East, and they won the Big Ten Championship. You know, they had all those arrows in their quiver, so to speak. Look, it is, here's the thing. They did. They won the game. They won it on the road. They won it by double digits. That would probably win the day, except if Texas keeps skeeching along the way it has, where three of their last four wins have been close, sketchy one-score victories, but they keep winning. They end up playing Oklahoma State in the Big 12 championship game. They win that again by 3 points. And Alabama goes into Atlanta and beats a team that nobody has beaten since 2021 when Alabama did it. And looks, again, very good doing it. It's going to be an argument. It's going to be a debate. It's a tough one. But I'm not sure which way that goes.
Georgia hasn't played a tough schedule this year.
Nope.
I am admitting this is ridiculous, and I can't sit there and say, well, sorry, Texas. Thanks for going to Alabama and winning at Alabama by double digits and having the game put away late in the fourth. I mean, it was a close game. They scored 21 in the fourth to win it, but still, they won the game.
Yep.
It makes a mockery out of the playoff if you leave them out and you pick Bama over them. They each have one loss.
Like, it's a mockery of the season. Yeah, agree.
You can't do it. You just can't.
I get it, but like, what did Alabama do? Now, if this is a typical SEC season, maybe, and Alabama's knocking off like all of these, you know, all these really good teams or something like that. I don't know. Like, if it's a loaded, like, I can't believe why. So my little schedule of how to go down this is blown, of course. I don't know how to run anything. But, like, how in the world is Florida State ahead of Washington right now? It doesn't matter. It does not matter. But, like, Washington
They shouldn't be.
They're surviving a gauntlet of, like, tough teams. And so I'm looking at Alabama. They beat Middle Tennessee State. They lose to Texas. They barely beat Florida State, South Florida. They beat Ole Miss. That's their best win. Mississippi State, fired coach. Texas A&M, fired coach. Arkansas could be a fired coach by 3. Tennessee, second best win. LSU, they lost to Florida State by a lot. They don't have a defense. Kentucky, Chattanooga, Auburn. I don't. It's not one of those years where you're looking and going, all right, you know, they have run a true gauntlet. The SEC is not that good this year. It's not deep like it usually is. It's really good at the top, but it's not deep.
I hear what you're saying. I am not disputing your points, but let's turn around and look at who Texas has beaten other than Alabama. And that's a big other, obviously. But I believe they've beaten one team that is ranked in the top 25.
K-State.
Other than Alabama. Yeah. Yes, K-State, which... We know if K-State could kick an extra point, K-State wins that game.
Yeah.
Game control.
Back.
You know, if Alabama's beaten number 18 Tennessee, number 15 LSU, number 13 Tennessee, Ole Miss, and number 1 Georgia, that's a lot on the resume. And again, it would be a hard call.
I can't argue your side is wrong. Like, I get it.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a hell of a debate. Let's put it that way.
It would be a hell of a debate, and it would be a fitting end to the four-teamer if the SEC somehow got left out and just be like, can we just get past this?
Yeah.
Okay. But, of course, more likely than not, it's Georgia curb stomps them or something like that. Yeah. I don't know. Still Alabama. All right. Our other contenders, Florida State or Ohio State. We got Ohio State. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. What are we, 20 minutes in? We made it to number 2. Made it to number 2. Minnesota at Michigan. They would get Iowa and Indy. Michigan, we'll just do these two together. At Maryland, Iowa State, and Iowa probably in Indy. Offense is starting to get better for Iowa State, but they played Rutgers and MSU. Who knows? Travion Henderson is asserting himself. They have Marvin Harrison. Ain't nobody got Marv. They got him. Michigan... Who the hell knows? They just won a game running 32 consecutive run plays. Do they have is Roman Wilson a good wide receiver or not? Don't know. Can J.J. McCarthy make big plays in a big game? We don't know. Is Jim Harbaugh going to be the coach? Is he going to coach the next 2 games? Is he going to coach after that? Is he everything's focused on this hearing, this bizarro hearing. Is he going to be on the plane to Maryland or not? We don't know. Like, there's still an NCAA investigation going on, too.
Yeah.
Like, we still haven't answered the basic questions of this entire scandal. Like, day one, how many people at Michigan knew? I feel somewhat confident, although judging Jim Harbaugh's by his behavior, but it's risky, but I am somewhat confident that they'll never prove Harbaugh knew or he actually didn't know.
Right.
But did anybody else?
Yeah.
Did any other staffer? Did any other assistants? It's still ongoing. They're still trying to interview people, look through stuff. There's a lot of work. What if something is found? I don't know. Like, we still have no idea. Everyone's focused on this like little hearing, but it's like, okay, that's like the first battle in a long war. And so we got all of that going on. Who the heck knows? What do you do? Does this ever wear them down? I don't know. This is a circus. It's great for us. Great content. But who wins this game? I don't know. And obviously the winner is in and the loser's out as far as I'm concerned.
Can you really keep America's team out of the playoff?
I forgot about that.
Self-proclaimed America's team, Jim Harbaugh.
Adversity, so. Pat.
Yes, that's right.
It's you know what? You know what is true adversity? Getting caught. I've covered a lot of trials, and usually the defendant who's charged with the crime, I would describe that as adverse. That is, it's generally an adverse process. Do not mock their adversity, Pat.
Yeah, I apologize for not taking them very seriously as America's team. But yeah, fortunately, well, again, we don't know whether Harbaugh's coaching, but Michigan will play Ohio State on November 25th. And that will help really set the terms for championship week in terms of who's got the inside shots and who doesn't. Because whoever loses that game, their season is done. Their regular season is done. The winner gets to go play a horrific Iowa offense and win by 5 touchdowns. But
Iowa, you know, blowing this for the Big Ten would be so funny.
It would be beyond hilarious. I mean, like, incredible. Like, if Iowa somehow wins 6-3 in the championship game, be the greatest moment in Kirk Ferentz history and one of the worst moments in Big Ten history.
Imagine if the Michigan survives 3 games without Jim Harbaugh, beats Penn State, Maryland, Ohio State, and then, of course, like, the epic celebration it would be, and then somehow loses 6-3 to Kirk Ferentz on a return punt but a missed field goal. Or missed extra point.
They can't even return punts anymore. Cooper DeJean's out for the season.
That's true.
No.
Okay, a safety. 2-zip.
There you go. 2-zip.
I don't know. So funny. Anyway, proceed.
Well, I mean, no, that's – I mean, the drama is very focused right now in the Big Ten and those two schools and in that courthouse on Friday and what happens there, what comes out of that. You know, can they get an Insta ruling that – Jim Harbaugh is clear and ready to go. Is there some sort of settlement where they just decide, okay, you're just out Maryland, then you can come back? I mean, all those things are up in the air. But then that game will be played at noon on November 25th, hopefully under leaden skies in cold temperatures, and somebody will win. And that team that wins that is all but assured of going to the playoff pending the 2-0 loss to Iowa.
You know, the thing that kind of concerns me about, well, either one of these teams, right? If Michigan gets in, is their offense, both of them. But if Michigan specifically gets into a game with a team that they just can't completely squash defensively and have to, you know, score a little bit. And really, honestly, the same for Ohio State. We've seen both offenses at times struggle. And that concerns me. So, like, I'm trying to envision a semifinal game, a match against, say, a Washington, you know, where you've got Michael Penix, who can, you know, the deep connections, the deep passing game that Washington has and Penix has with his receivers. And I know there's a game or two where they didn't have it. Arizona State comes to mind, where they really struggled. Otherwise, they've scored on everybody, and they've done it with that deep connection passing game that reminds me of the LSU 2019. I wonder how one of those the you know Michigan or Ohio State would fare. So that would be my my only concern there when you look toward the playoff. But yeah, obviously, like you know, at least one of these teams is in. And if Ohio State loses a nail biter against Michigan, is there a chance they both could be in? I think yes. You know, things sure have to break right, but sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
they didn't even lose a nail biter last year.
Last year, right.
Yeah, so that's kind of the thing about the four team. You set this up and go, well, this is what makes the four team great is these like do or die games, but then it's like do or maybe die. Yeah, so Ohio State, they still would have the victory over Penn State, a victory over Notre Dame. And I mean, the rest of the Big Ten is just lousy.
Ugh, it is.
They need to do a better job stealing signs. They are not. Whoever's getting Bielema's notes, it's not working.
The defensive signs in the Big Ten West so somebody can score.
Yeah.
Because, my God, the offense is in that division.
All right. So, obviously, Washington and Oregon. We have Florida State. I'll go to Florida State. They play Northern Alabama. Yeah. They're at Florida. They get an ACC title game. Is it set for Louisville? We believe it's Louisville.
Not yet. If Louisville wins against Miami Saturday, it's likely Louisville. North Carolina would have to win both of its games at Clemson, at North Carolina State, and then tiebreakers would have to go their way, and it could actually come down to, like, Georgia Tech. Like, where does Georgia Tech finish in the rankings could decide who plays Florida State in the championship game.
Yeah, and I didn't mention Texas. Texas, there's a Big Ten. They had a new rule. They had to come up. Clarify their rule tiebreaker. It's a mess.
It's the worst written thing of all time. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, well, they didn't anticipate. I mean, this is what's going to happen without divisions. Divisions were not always great because they set up weird championship games, but they did help in at least knowing what the hell was going to happen.
Yeah.
So Texas at Iowa State this weekend. They get Texas Tech at home and then a Big Ten title game against who knows.
I can't wait till we have 18 team conferences with no divisions and the tiebreaker list is going to be like longer than a novel.
Yeah. And 12 game seasons. Like the AFC only has 16 teams. The NFC has 16 teams.
Big Ten, 18.
Yeah. Washington. So Florida State's got that. Obviously they went out. They're going to get in. Right.
I mean, it's just simple. Yeah. Keep an eye on. Look, I know Florida struggled this year. That game's at the Swamp at night. Might have to win it to go to a bowl. I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't be the craziest thing for the Gators to spring the upset and just completely ruin their rivals' championship hopes. Just saying.
Certainly improve Billy Napier's approval rating.
Yeah.
Florida has shown moments of pop, you know, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's
especially at home. Yeah.
Especially at home. We'll see what they do. They got Missouri this weekend. They're at Missouri, but they've shown moments. They played really well against Tennessee. I don't know. Do they have it? Probably not, but I agree with you on that. It's also get that rivalry game. A lot of kids played against each other in the state. It's, you know, it's definitely not easy. And finally, Washington and Oregon, they're sort of on a match here. Washington is at Oregon State. They get Washington State at home. It's not settled. They play Oregon in Vegas, but it's probable if we're counting them as contenders or else they're eliminated before that. They have quality wins over Arizona, Utah, USC, and Oregon. Again, I think they should be four. They're not, whatever. Oregon then is at Arizona State. They get Oregon State. Oregon State can screw everybody up out there. And then there's they've won their last four by 24 points since losing. Then they would get Washington and Vegas. So could either of these teams survive with a loss?
I think a lot depends what happens elsewhere. If you get 12-1 Oregon, you get 12-1 Oregon in the clubhouse. I think they've got an argument.
Above them right now.
Right. And you say, look, we were the best conference all along. We just came through with 12 wins, and we just beat the team that beat us, Washington. Now, I still say, like, the Oregon State scenario, this may be Oregon State's last great moment, if they can do it, because they're about ready to slide closer to oblivion, although maybe with a lot of money. But they play Washington and Oregon back-to-back here. Win them both, blow up the Pac-12 as a conference playoff entity, go to the conference championship, win, and then watch everybody leave and say, goodbye, get out, we'll at least take the money, see you later. It would be phenomenal if Oregon State could pull that off. I don't know if they're good enough, but it's on their racket, as they say in tennis. They've got the chance.
That would be amazing. Yeah. It would. And what a story, right? what a story. Like in their final year. Yeah, that would be awesome. And yeah, I mean, not out of the question.
Good team.
Good team. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. So, I think. I think the prospect of Washington dropping one of these three games at Oregon State, Washington State, or against Oregon is, I just think it's probably higher than any of the other unbeatens, right, as far as getting a loss. I think there's a higher chance that Washington has a loss compared to everybody else. I think the big question is, will a one-loss Pac-12 team get in over one loss Alabama, one loss Texas, one loss Big Ten runner up. And I think the answer is they probably don't leap over any of those teams. Maybe one, maybe a one loss Michigan they leap over or something. But they need the Pac-12. They're going to get the playoff. They badly need Washington to go undefeated.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to Oregon State and Washington State, hoping for that because they might get playoff shares. All right. We had the court ruling. Ross set that up brilliantly for us the other day. Washington State and Oregon State won a ruling in this little courtroom out in Washington, declaring them the members of the Pac-2 and giving them access or control over, Ross can do it better, the funds that would come in this year. Which is a lot, hundreds of millions of dollars. I love it. You bail out. Tough break.
Yep.
You ran for money. Money's going to get you. I imagine there'll be a negotiated solution because no one wants to play. This is one hell of a game of poker. But I don't know. Maybe not. What's the latest? And what's the latest with the Pac-2 finding a new, dare they say, alliance?
Hopefully this alliance goes better than the other one. Yeah. We talked about this on the pod. I think I reported a little bit last month about this, that the Mountain West in the Pac-2 were discussing a scheduling alliance, a two-year kind of scheduling alliance. After the court hearing now, they kind of re-engaged the two, Oregon State and Washington State, with the Mountain West. And talks are speeding up, where something could be done within 5 to 7 days, probably, maybe sooner. Mountain West presidents meet later Thursday, probably by the time you're listening to this, they are meeting or have met, to kind of, I think, give Gloria Navarro as the commissioner more permission to continue negotiations. So it's an interesting setup. So the way I'll do the on the field and the off the field, the on the field, the scheduling part of this is each Mountain West team would reduce their conference games that they play from 8 to 7. And it would be a 7+1 scheduling model. So they play 7 Mountain West games, and they played one game against either Oregon State or Washington State. But the Oregon State or Washington State does not count against the Mountain West standings. And Oregon State and Washington State are not eligible for the Mountain West championship game. And so that's kind of how like the schedule would go. Those teams, and there's 4 of them in the Mountain West who already have Oregon State and Washington State on their schedule, like as a non-conference game, keep that game in, add another game against the other team. So like Boise State will play Oregon State and Washington State each year because they already had one on the schedule for each year. So that's how it would go. On the field, off the field, there'll be a lucrative compensation package, probably cash from what the teams just won, a portion of the revenue that they potentially have control over. So there'll be a lucrative package from Oregon State and Washington State to the Pac-12, kind of like a, or to the Mountain West, kind of like a rental charge fee or something like that. Thanks for, you know, let us renting your league for 2 years and giving us 7-8 games. So they'll have a fee. They'll have a package there. And then as well, there'll be kind of an intent on a merger, on some kind of Pac-12 Mountain West merger in the end of this. There's probably an out to that, but there's an intent to that. And then the third thing as part of this, I think it's really smart, is there will be a really stiff financial penalty if Oregon State and Washington State decide at the end of this alliance to poach only a portion of Mountain West teams and not everybody. There will be a big financial penalty, because that's obviously what the Mountain West has feared, is that they will poach, you know, 5 to 7 of their top programs and rebuild the Pac-12. And the idea is, no, you have to get us all 12. I think it's 12. Yeah. 12 football playing. Yeah. You have to get us all 12 or none at all. So that's kind of the gist of it. It's interesting and it's needed, obviously. There really wasn't any other options. But boy, did Oregon State and Washington State try. They floated a scheduling alliance, I believe, to the Conference USA into the Sun Belt as well. And I think part of that was because they didn't want to agree to some of these things with the Mountain West, but there's no choice.
I think it could be win-win for all involved. Yes, the Oregon State and Washington State would have to give up some cash to make it happen. But for the long term, this is where they should be. These are teams they should be playing, because the other options don't exist. So I think it'd be smart. I think it'd be good. And I would be happy, again, if Oregon State, Washington State keep all the money and have a conference to play in, and it's a pretty good conference, it's geographically sensible, good. I hope it happens.
I think it'd be a fun conference.
Yeah.
I mean, and they can produce good teams. And obviously you're going to take a hit somewhat in recruiting, but it's a little different now. I mean, there are good teams in the Mountain West. The football is good, and you can certainly get a path to a playoff. So it's the best scenario for them, especially if they get to keep a lot of the money and pay down. I mean, Oregon State's got a ton of stadium debt, you know, for understandable reasons. You build thinking, oh, I'm in the past. This league's existed for 108 years. We're a member. We should be able to carry on. And then it goes away. It's amazing. So I think it's a good spot. It'll be a fun league. Undoubtedly, nothing will curb the disappointment of what happened, but I do think you can get some really cool rivalries going. Washington State Boise just seems pretty fun. Yeah. They're not quite next to each other, but I mean, they're close enough. Like, there's a lot of good things going. So
I will say, the line of the week from the wise guys over at the Reddit CFB Twitter account is pretty good. Now that Oregon State and Washington State have gotten control of the Pac-12, they said that Oregon State and Washington State could just basically declare James Madison the champion of the Pac-12, and who's going to stop them?
Yeah, that was really disappointing. Again, with the NCAA, it's college, they love rules. They had a meeting about the rules. Jacksonville State and James Madison, could they be bowl eligible, right? Was that it?
Yep. Posted.
And they denied
it.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't want these student athletes to have a good postseason experience, Dan, because they haven't put in their 4 years of drudgery getting there.
Here's the thing. They need to.
They don't want teams jumping to FBS, I guess. But
yeah. Well, also, yeah. I think the big thing this transitional this deal is this. In order to compete at the FBS level, right, it takes you know, more resources and all that stuff. And so the idea behind this rule, I think, was always that it takes a while to build up to the level. But also part of this was a lot of programs who make the transition don't play a full FBS schedule. So they play a lot of FCS teams. So, you know, you could imagine like a team that plays like four FCS teams in their first year in the FBS making a bowl game or something, you know, by beating predominantly FCS teams. So there's a few reasons this rule's in place. I think I would imagine over the offseason there'll be a hard look at this rule. A similar rule is in D2 to D1. It's a four-year transition for postseason. So like Tarleton State, which I think is in year four of their four-year transition to D1 from D2, is that there is they were trying to get a postseason, you know, a place in the FCS playoffs, and they were denied it all as well. So I think this rule will probably get a good hard look over the offseason and maybe
subcommittee meeting at, you know, in Florida at the Regal so Palm.
Pontevedra. Yeah. When they're not playing golf, they'll get around to making
just
a ruling.
It just seems like sometimes it's just misery and adherence to rules for the sake of misery and adherence to rules.
There's still a pretty good chance both of those schools, James Madison, Jacksonville State, playing bowl games. If we don't have enough bowl eligible teams,
well, at least we got that.
They can go. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I just don't understand. It's why I would never be on the committee, but it's the same thing. Like, why would I ever want to be in this? Like, just no imagination sometimes. Like, I just wonder if there's any joy to it. Like, yeah, you know what? These guys, they did enough. Let them play.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, James Madison is the best team in a pretty good league. The Sun Belt's a pretty good league, and they haven't, you know, their schedule is not for FCS teams. They have earned their way to 10-0.
Best team in the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the second year of them being like, I don't understand the mentality of this stuff, but that's me. I'm not in charge. Question on this, because we talk about a joyless pursuit sometimes. The Bahamas Bowl is temporarily out. I think they're reconstructing that weirdo stadium they got down there. It's like a track and like only one side. I don't know. It's always fun. Bahamas Bowl. So whoever qualifies for the Bahamas Bowl will no longer get to go to the Bahamas. Instead, they will go to Charlotte. Also, it's no longer called the Bahamas Bowl. It's called the Famous Toastery Bowl. Mm-hmm. Famous Toastery. I thought it was like a knockoff Pop-Tart, which I was like, well, that would probably be. I mean, if you can't go to the Bahamas, the next best thing to do is getting to eat Pop-Tarts in Charlotte, right? Like that's, I think, would be your second. That would be a buy. But in fact, the Famous Toastery is a restaurant chain in Charlotte and a few spots in North Carolina and Virginia and maybe Tennessee and South Carolina. Like it's trying to become a Denny's or something, the new Denny's.
It's pretty good. I've eaten at one of the ones in Charlotte.
Yeah. The menu's looking pretty good. So what would you choose, Pat? Would you rather go to Famous Toastery in Charlotte or the Bahamas, but kind of have like not as good of a breakfast?
And I don't care. Like, if the stadium is literally falling down around me, I want to go to the Bahamas. I do not care about one thing other than get me there, get me the temperatures, give me a day on the beach, day to play in the waves. I'll show up and play in a sandlot. I just want to go play there. Nothing against the fine city of Charlotte or the Famous Toastery, where I did have a good brunch one time. But give me Bahamas.
Before we pick the games, I got to get to one story here, a quick people's court. A lot of people, there was a horse that got loose on a plane. A lot of people wanted to talk about the horse getting loose on the plane. It's kind of a sad story. The horse had to get put down. We're trying to be upbeat here. So no offense to all the people that sent us the horse. It wasn't like galloping down the aisle with the passengers.
No, that isn't how it works.
People's court here from ultra marathon running in the UK. They had a ultra marathon, 50 miles you got to run in Liverpool. And this Australian woman, I think she's Australian. No, she's British. I'm sorry. This British woman, she was flew in from Australia. Josiah Zacharyski was running in the 50 mile race, but then she suffered some type of an injury and jumped in her friend's car during the race and drove in the car. Yet when she somehow finished anyway, so maybe she got out, and they handed her a third place trophy, and she got up on the trophy stand and accepted her bronze medal in the ultra marathon, which of course was aided by riding in a car. Not really hard to drive, ride in a car for 50 miles. That's not a challenge. She said, obviously she did not deserve it, but she's trying to beat the punishment. This is a very like Connor Stallions acted alone defense. I don't know. I accept my actions that I did travel in a car and then later completed the run. Okay. So she rode the car, then got out. I guess the injury healed during the drive.
Yeah, it did.
Crossed the finish line and inappropriately received a medal. But she said she returned it immediately. And the reason that she took the medal was she had just flown in from Australia and was jet lagged and crazed and couldn't think straight.
Like the worst excuse.
Lots of excuses. Lots of excuses. I mean, there.
Yeah. So excuse. Pat, I was. Did she? You buy this excuse that the reason she accepted the medal was not because she thought no one will remember that I rode in a car. And there's a famous Boston Marathon where the woman Rosie took the MBTA, the train in Boston, to subway during part of the race and had won it.
Yeah,
And then people were like, we saw her on the train. She was on my stop. So I don't know how this worked. Do you accept jet lag as an appropriate excuse for climbing up on the medal stand and accepting a bronze medal? Have you ever been so jet lagged that someone handed you a medal and you did not know? You've flown all over the world. All of us have.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
A lot of flights to Asia, Australia. You can be a bit disoriented. However, not to the extent that I would accept an ultramarathon medal out of nowhere or having absolutely flagrantly cheated. However, too, I will say this. Oh, she's busted. She should be busted. But ultramarathoning is so stupid and so ridiculous. Like running 50 to 100 miles, that is what you do. Then you shouldn't have any rules. Just forget it. Y'all are psychos. And if she wants to cheat, let her cheat and keep her medal. Y'all crazy.
You know, I haven't probably flown as much as Pat to like Asia and all those places. I've only been overseas once. I did fly to Hawaii though. And I'll be honest, when I landed in Hawaii, I felt like I had drank, you know, 3 packs of beer, a couple of bottles of bourbon.
Had you?
Maybe a few.
I flew to Beijing
once
and got drunk twice. I got drunk twice on a plane.
Maybe a few. Maybe a few. But it's terrible. So I could understand if you would be disoriented enough to maybe say, hey, this medal looks pretty. You know, they're giving it to me. I'm a little fuzzy right now. Maybe I did earn this medal and step up on the stand.
I like Pat going with the joy. Why do we have so many rules? It's an ultra marathon.
Yeah. Look,
the panel said they took into her state of mind, but it took a week to return the medal. Even if she was suffering from brain fog on the day of the race, she had a week following the race to realize her actions, return the trophy, which she did not do. And then finally, she posted about the race on social media and did not disclose that she had competed the race on a non-competitive basis. I like how this, I love the term, non-competitive basis. She caught a ride. Yeah, that's non-competitive. Hey, just the other day, I rode 50 miles in a car. Am I an ultra marathon? I would only accept this if she says she got drunk on the plane. My trips to Asia, I like getting after it.
I think I was on that flight to Beijing when you got drunk twice.
No, that was Tokyo. It was like 9 in the morning. You flew into Detroit. We're catching this flight. to Tokyo, and Pat would only have like one drink with me. And someone else was there. One of your colleagues.
I think I had two. Michael Rosenberg and Stephanie Epstein. They were kind of aghast that we were drinking at all.
They were aghast that we were getting after it. Yeah. There was definite, like, what are you guys doing? I'm like, I don't have to fly the plane. It's a 14-hour flight. Yeah. I'm going to get drunk, take a nap, and then do it again. But.
Should have brought some gummies.
It'd be better. I don't know.
You'd have to get up and go to the bathroom all the time.
Let's go. So if she was hung over and couldn't finish the race and needed a ride, she didn't drive. That's the only way I'm excusing this. Here I am. Rule follower.
There we go. Dan Wetzel, having spent 20 minutes decrying the rules with the NCAA. Now,
yeah, even this one, I got to say, you can't ride in the car. How is she going to survive this adversity? That's really what we want to know. She's America's distance runner. I'm coming through some adversity here. I got caught driving in a car. It's terrible. How will I do it? All right, let's pick the games. Situation's getting dire here at the end. Well, Sean has got a lead.
Where do we stand?
Sean makes picks based on like which friend he hates that roots for.
Right.
I got a friend who's a Tennessee fan. I can't stand that guy right now. So, all right. Sean is 39-27. We all have three ties. Ross is 36-30. I'm 36-30. Pat, 31-35. I believe you're mathematically eliminated or close. No, maybe not, but.
Womp, womp, womp.
There's a magic number. Let's just put it that way. There's a magic number.
I'm continuing to claw back towards 500.
You're
going to
need to
go.
You need to go pretty much 6-0 the rest of the way each week. All right. Number 10, Louisville at Miami. The most intriguing line maybe of the season. Louisville's got one loss. Miami is not, what are they, got four losses?
Six and four. Yeah.
Miami is giving half a point.
Mm.
Noon on ABC. Pat.
I don't get that line. I'll take Louisville. I will take the half point. Here's the thing. In addition to where I think Louisville's better than Miami is, Louisville's had two extra days of rest. They played on a Thursday. They've got two big-time playmakers who have been playing through some injuries that should be, you know, a little bit better further along here. And Jawar Jordan, their running back, and Jamari Thrash, their quarterback. Miami's coming off, you know, a rivalry battle with Florida State that they lost in fairly heartbreaking fashion. Emery Williams, the quarterback who started that game, blew out his arm on like the one of the last plays. He's out. They're going back to Tyler Van Dyke, who they've kind of lost faith in. So I will take the Cardinals here, and they've got a lot to play for too, trying to get to Charlotte to play Florida State. So give me Louisville and the half point.
First of all, I gotta cut. Like, where did we get the half point? What is a half point? They can't tie. It's a one. I don't know. Maybe that popped up on that somehow.
Yeah, mine says one. I mean, the one I'm looking at. On yards,
a half point is pointless. Yeah. It's the same as pick 'em.
Yeah.
You can't lose. You can't tie. So let's make it.
I've never
one.
Seen a half point.
I don't know what. Yeah, there was some glitch in the system. Sorry.
One. Yeah.
Someone's offering you half a point. Bet with somebody else. It's
not, yeah, that's right.
Not a legitimate operation. They haven't thought this through.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said this on the show before, Miami is must watch this year. Who knows what the hell they're going to do?
Louisville is giving one now. This we're going to go with these stats. So Pat, do you want to change your bet?
Yeah, Louisville's a favorite by one.
Okay. No, okay. Louisville's going to win. Yeah.
We had a breakdown. Yeah. Okay, Louisville's winning.
Yeah. That's ahead. Right. I'm going with Louisville too, but even though who knows what Miami's going to do? I mean, they came close to beating Florida State, got pounded by NC State in North Carolina, but beat Clemson, lost to Georgia Tech on the Neal issue. I mean, it's been quite a season. So it wouldn't shock me if they come out and like pull the upset, because nothing would shock me with the Hurricanes. But give me Louisville to cover.
Sean.
Yeah, I got sunburned real bad one time in Miami.
Here we go.
I don't think that helped my luck at the bars or clubs on spring break. So I'll take Louisville. Never got rejected or burned there.
I'll take the Cardinals. This one scares me though. Vegas knows something.
Yeah,
this is a Vegas knows right. something. But I'm gonna, I'll take Louisville. Number 22, Utah at number 17, Arizona. Arizona's giving 1:230 on the Pac-12 Network.
Okay. In other words, we won't watch it.
Probably not going to see it, but yeah, it's a pretty good game. Yeah. How about at the beginning of the year saying that Arizona would not only be ranked higher than Utah, but favored? Incredible job down there.
Well, yeah, you got my attention earlier, Dan, when you were talking about the SEC and their best non-conference win. The fact that Mississippi State, who just fired their coach and is 4-6, has the SEC's arguably best non-conference win. Against Arizona. The other one, obviously, is Missouri over Kansas State. But, yeah, it's pretty incredible what Jed Fish has done. And Jed Fish has done enough for his name to be certainly circulated around for some other maybe bigger Power 5 jobs. So that's going to be an interesting carousel in Tucson. At home, Utah, you know, Utah played enough with Washington. They were right there, competitive, that I actually think that the Utes will go in and Kyle Whittingham will find a way to kind of put the stop on Arizona's four-game winning streak here. So give me the Utes to win it and to cover the 1.
Yeah, I'm with you. I refuse to think of Utah as throwing in the towel on a season. It's not how they're wired, and they are still – they still have a chance to make it to Vegas for the championship game. It's a slim chance, but Arizona's had an awesome season. He has done, Jed Fish has done great work. Oftentimes when coaches become the subject of potential either interest or negotiations for another job, they're not as focused on the game that are upcoming. Combine all the factors. I'm going to take Utah to win that.
Utah has played excellent scramble golf this year, plugging and playing whoever they needed to get a win. It's been very impressive, but they're not really playing somebody where they can sabotage an entire season. So I'm going to go with Arizona to cover this game.
Scramble golf is a good descriptor.
I'm taking Utah. I'm sticking with them. I'm sticking with them for all the reasons previously mentioned. Number 1, Georgia at number 18, Tennessee. Dogs given 10.5, 3:30 CBS. Pat.
Going to be there for that one. Looking forward to it. I haven't been to Neyland Stadium in a while. It's a great place to watch a game, and I haven't seen Georgia in person yet. So that will be fun. There's no way I'm not taking the Dogs here. They covered a pretty big number last week against Mississippi. They didn't cover. Well, no, they did cover against Missouri or not. I can't remember. Maybe they didn't. But no, I'm taking Georgia. They're up. They're hitting on all cylinders. I think Missouri might have exposed some things in Tennessee. For Missouri to outrush Tennessee by 172 yards was pretty startling. And if they can do that, then Georgia might be able to do that as well. So I'm rolling with the Dogs.
Yeah, I thought that this might be a little challenge for Georgia and could be a close game until last week when Georgia obliterated Ole Miss and then Tennessee lost at Missouri. Same, agree with Pat. Give me the Dogs.
Tennessee hasn't found their consistency this year. They also haven't been able to evolve or develop Joe Milton enough, where other teams have been able to develop their quarterbacks midseason and turn the ship around. The Vols look a bit stagnant. I'm going with Georgia.
Take Dogs and a Brock Bauer touchdown parlay right there. I'm taking Georgia. The Sunflower Showdown. It really doesn't have the sound of like the Civil War.
You know, Red River Shootout.
Red River. No. Yeah. The Sunflower Showdown. Kansas State at Kansas, number 21, Kansas State at number 25, Kansas. Can't be too many games when these two are both ranked. Kansas State, 8.5-point favorites, 7 p.m., FS1. Ross.
This is, like, to me, like the bet of the week. I mean, I can't believe that the Jayhawks are at home with the similar record, good team, are this big of underdogs at 8.5. So give me KU to hold serve at home. Me calling it one of the locks of the week, I'm sure will mean that Kansas State will win by 30, but give me the Jayhawks.
Well, I'm going to take the Wildcats, so we'll yeah, see.
Figured that was coming.
Chris Klieman has dominated Kansas. His 4 years there, they have blown them out every time. Kansas was brutal in losing to Texas Tech last week at home. They say, Jason, they're optimistic Jason Bean will play. He had a head injury, I guess a concussion or a near concussion or something last week. If he plays, Kansas got a real chance. If he doesn't, they've got to go with the freshman quarterback, Cole Ballard, I believe it is, who's their third stringer because Jalen Daniels was also the starter at one point. Then that could get ugly. But I think K-State still has a lot to play for. They're a good team. I am going to take the Wildcats to keep going.
Yeah, Bean took a nasty shot last week, and even if he is healthy, he needs to stay pretty much untouched this week to play all four quarters, just in my eyes. So I'm going to take Kansas State. Kansas is just too banged up. I'm not optimistic about Bean playing the full game, but I'm not totally abreast to his total injury status, so I'll take Kansas State.
Yeah, I'll give Ross a lone Jayhawk.
Mm.
Eight and a half. I don't like 8.5, but I picked Kansas to win as my lock of the week. I'm mad at them. So I'm going to go like Sean's. No, I think K-State's better. Number 5, Washington at number 11, Oregon State. Pac-2, stand up. Oregon State giving 2.5. 7:30 on ABC. Did not realize that was the spread. Mm. What do we go to here? Yeah. Ross.
Yeah, that is a shocking spread, isn't it? 2.5 Oregon State, but they played well. They're at home. I actually think I just said it earlier, right? I think Washington is probably the most likely team of the unbeaten to take a loss. Maybe this is where it is. Get me the Beavers.
Shoot, yeah, I was kind of hoping I could get Lone Beaver there, but then them giving points, it is surprising. But I'm taking the Beavers. They were my preseason pick to win the Pac-12. They can still do it. This is, again, I went through it before. Huge, huge game for Oregon State in the history of the program this week and next week. And I think they rise to the occasion. And that's no disrespect to Washington, but Washington has the burden has gotten a little bit heavy of carrying this undefeated record this far. And they're walking into a tough situation against a good team. So I am a Beaver believer.
I'm going to put the pressure on Dan and let him decide if I'm going to get Lone Husky or not. I'm taking Washington.
You will not. God. I'm going Huskies.
Yep. All right. I'll go Washington. Mm.
Penix plus 2.5. I'm taking it. Lock of the week time. Who's got one?
I got one. Kentucky at South Carolina. The Cats are a 1.5-point favorite. But I think Shane Beamer at home, a chance to go to a bowl game here. They'd have to win out, have to beat Clemson and win this game. And I think they get this one at least in heading to the Clemson game with a bowl game on the line. So give me South Carolina to cover the 1.5. They're a 1.5-point underdog at home to Kentucky.
I'm going to take USC giving 6.5 to UCLA. Oh, I might have stolen somebody's pick there. Yeah. Caleb Williams' last home game in the Coliseum. I think that he boots up and has a big, big showing. UCLA's in a bit of disarray. Offense is brutal. Quarterback play, not good. Heat's on Chip Kelly. They got an investigation of their recruits stealing out of the Rose Bowl locker room. Lots swirling in Westwood. So I'm going to take the Trojans to win by 7 or more against the Bruins.
Yeah, it's a good pick. That's a good pick. I mean, UCLA, you say, well, USC's got no defense. UCLA scored 7 against Arizona State and 10 against Arizona.
Yep.
Like, they don't got any offense right now, so I'm angry. That's all right. Sean?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Penn State giving 20.5 to Rutgers. I'm tired of the Rutgers story. I'm tired of people talking to me about Rutgers. I know they covered and they had a great hot start to the season, but Penn State blanked Iowa. Iowa is a better defense. I'm taking the Nittany Lions, 20.5.
I'm tempted to go the other way on that
one. I know. I would have too.
Yeah. Penn State can't score.
Yeah.
Rutgers is in the little group chat of stolen signs, apparently, allegedly. Everybody, Ohio State has played Penn State. They're in the group chat. They're in the group thread.
I hope there is a group chat with Ryan Walters and Greg Schiano and Ryan Day, and it's just something like, you know, Michigan haters or
yeah, right. No, like what do they call them? Like meat chicken or something? Like what's the
yeah?
You know, they always have like some kind of yeah. I think they're in the group chat. Penn State. I don't think they're in the group chat.
I think Penn State is totally in the jar now. Their season is largely meaningless. They got nothing to play for.
That said, Rutgers basically got to bowl eligible and quit. They want to go to the toaster bowl there. And they got six wins and they got shut out by Iowa.
They did. I mean, you know,
this game fascinates me. And the Big Ten slate is awful. This league is awful.
Awful.
It is awful. I was looking for a good good Big Ten game, and I'm going to take one. Watch this. Northwestern at home. David Braun, new contract. It's a new day in Evanston, baby. Remember that scandal?
Yeah.
You don't need to go to Washtenaw County. They got enough lawsuits on that one. All in Cook County or wherever, whatever county they're in. Northwestern getting 3 points from Purdue, a 3-7 Purdue team. I'm taking the Wildcats at home, fired up. Let's go.
Here's what you're betting against, Dan.
What?
This is Northwestern season so far. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win. You're betting they're going to do something 2 weeks in a row. Hasn't happened yet. You're betting they're going to go win-win here.
Well, I'm going to take it. I think they're fired up. I think the players are fired up. The program's rolling. Going to get to 6. Northwestern at a bowl is good stuff.
It's phenomenal. Yeah.
All right. That's our show. Keep subscribing. Share us on social media. We'll be back Sunday, certainly for Monday. We'll wrap up and talk about all this week. We'll have maybe a different schedule next week, and we'll lay all that out on Sunday. So appreciate you. Talk to you later.